it's a moment of a little bit of fluidity on meetings around North Korea.
Talks with and about North Korea continue. It's Monday, January 15th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a false missile alert panics Hawaii. Walking again in Australia. No hands, no problem for Afghan girl. Rough flu season. Climate change for arid regions. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A potential landmark development in relations between two bitter rivals is raising some hope in Asia and around the world. South Korea has suggested the formation of a combined women's hockey team with North Korea to compete at the Winter Olympics next month. The proposal was acknowledged Saturday by North Korea's representative to the International Olympic Committee, but he did not say whether North Korea supported the idea. Both countries have agreed the North will participate in the Games and they will hold military talks to improve relations. More discussions are expected today, while separate discussions are to begin this week in Canada, as we hear from VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
Last Tuesday, North and South Korea sat down at a negotiating table in the demilitarized zone that separates the countries, the first time that's happened in 2 years. The subject of that meeting was the Winter Olympics, being held in the South next month. That meeting has seemingly overshadowed a meeting set for this week in the Western Canadian city of Vancouver. That meeting has drawn some controversy on a number of issues. Perhaps on top of that list is that Canada and the United States don't seem to agree on whether or not China should have been on the guest list of countries to attend the Vancouver meeting. We know that the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson does plan to attend, along with Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Chrystia Freeland. Russia is apparently not on the list. We use the word apparently because it remains unclear what countries are on the list and which countries are not. We welcome to VOA Asia Professor Paul Evans. Dr. Evans has been a professor at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver since 1999, teaching Asian and Trans-Pacific Affairs. Professor, what's going on here?
It's a moment of a little bit of fluidity on meetings around North Korea. The meeting that's scheduled here that Ms. Freeland and Mr. Tillerson devised a couple of months ago was put together, I think, just at the high point of the negative rhetoric that was flowing from Pyongyang and from Washington. And this was to have been an effort to bring together at least some of the like-minded for a discussion on how to proceed, part of the agenda being on the what we might call deepening pressure through sanctions, but also a hint that this was also to keep the idea of diplomacy in play as compared to military options. So that was the original idea a couple of months ago, and some things have changed. There is the new, almost the breakthrough discussions between North and South Korea. And there is also a lot of uncertainty about exactly what American positions are coming into this meeting here, and what it can really contribute. The initial idea of bringing together the like-minded and maybe some others has morphed a bit. The participants are principally countries that were involved in the Korean War 60-odd years ago. So what's missing at this meeting is there are, I think, will certainly not be North Koreans. There will not be Chinese. And there will not be Russians. So at most, this is half the sky.
How has this come about? Does that make any sense to you whatsoever?
Well, I think the central tension built into this particular meeting is what is the real focus? Is it ways of doubling down on the sanctions? All of the countries that will be participating are active in the UN sanction regulations. I think one of the issues that is going to be introduced at this meeting, and it has been in play privately for some time, but now it may come to the surface, there's going to be a lot of media and other covering this, is the question on the pressure and sanction side of what comes next. And that may involve a discussion on what could be called naval interdiction, monitoring, surveillance, or even the idea of quarantine, a word that was used last during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Is going to be one of the things that will be emphasized, we suspect, by some of the American participants.
You're talking blockade is what you're talking, right?
Well, you know, there's actually some technical differences between each of those. A blockade can actually mean stopping ships moving in, and this is particularly crucial for oil supply. Short of that, there can be much closer surveillance. You can have other ships in the neighborhood that are just registering the traffic in the region rather than actually trying to block it or stop it. The whole set of things that can be brought into play around sanctions against individual shipping companies and shipping lines, these are things that are not quite a blockade per se, but that are meant to tighten the sanctions without kinetic or without direct military engagement.
What are the concerns that you have been able to see as far as the stances between the United States and Korea, as far as the U.S. government is concerned?
I think one of the things in the background here is the anxiety in South Korea and the anxiety in many of the countries that are going to be there, that war talk, hot button talk, big button talk, is something that really does frighten them. And there's wanting to be a sign of, without undercutting the alliance, without undercutting the relationship with the United States, that there needs to be some signals that there are alternatives that must be pursued further beyond the military option.
Paul Evans is a professor at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver and is teaching Asian and Trans-Pacific Affairs. He is the current interim research director of the Institute of Asian Research. Paul, I thank you so much for being with us, and hopefully we can check with you again.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte says no extended term, no canceled elections. Aung San Suu Kyi says Rohingya mass grave inquiry, positive step. Papua New Guinea volcano prompts 1,500 to flee nearby island. Philippines raises its volcano alert, warns of hazardous eruptions. Burning Iranian tanker sinks off China's coast. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. U.S. Homeland Security Chief Kirstjen Nielsen said Sunday it was unfortunate there was a false emergency alarm about an incoming missile in Hawaii, but said authorities are all working to make sure it doesn't happen again. Officials continued to investigate the circumstances surrounding the Saturday incident in which residents of the westernmost U.S. state in the Central Pacific were erroneously sent emergency alerts on television, radio, email, and mobile devices that warned, quote, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii, seek immediate shelter, this is not a drill. Hawaii officials repeatedly apologized, saying the alert was sent when someone hit the wrong button during a shift change. Vern Miyagi is administrator of Hawaii's Emergency Management Administration and told reporters that the person responsible for the erroneous message feels terrible about it.
I deeply apologize for the trouble and heartbreak that we caused today. You know, we've spent the last few months trying to get ahead of this whole threat so that we could provide as much notification and preparation time to the public. Today was something that I regret because I accept responsibility for this. This is my team. We made a mistake. We're going to take processes and study this so that this doesn't happen again. Our focus now, of course, is not to have any more false alarms going out. And by doing this, we're working on procedures that have already been implemented. The first of all, the governor has directed that we hold off any more tests until we get this squared away. But please keep in mind that, again, the threat is there. If this comes out, you're going to have only about 12 to 13 minutes of warning for an actual event, and please take this to heart.
Told by reporters that emergency sirens had actually gone off in some communities, Miyagi said that he would have to look into the matter. The mistake was discovered within 20 minutes, but it took 38 minutes for state officials to issue a correction on mobile devices. Miyagi described how the false alarm occurred, and his team is already working on corrective measures.
It's a screen. It's more like a mouse click. It's a screen, a test button, and an actual. Okay, the wrong button was passed.
But once that button is pushed, that's it. It goes through.
That's correct.
Redundancy whatsoever.
I was going to say that the old process was no redundancy. We've implemented changes already to assure that it becomes a redundant process so that it won't be a single individual. There'll be at least two people that would be involved to initiate the alert.
Just a few weeks ago, Hawaii reinstated its Cold War-era alarm sirens amid growing fears of nuclear aggression by North Korea. Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard told CNN it was unacceptable that this happened, but it really highlights the stark reality of the people Hawaii are facing in being the U.S. state closest to North Korea at a time of Pyongyang's nuclear weapons development program and its frequent missile test launches. Happening now in Asia, an Iranian oil tanker that had been burning off the coast of China for more than a week exploded into a mass of flames on Sunday and sank. Rescue workers had recovered the bodies of just three crew members. The oil tanker that collided last week in the East China Sea with a Chinese cargo ship. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you've joined us for this Monday edition of VOA Asia. A young Kurdish filmmaker who lost both legs in a terrorist attack in Turkey is walking after receiving pioneering robotic surgery in Australia. Lisa Callan was among dozens of people injured when Islamic State militants bombed a Kurdish political rally in June 2015. Her Iraqi-born surgeon says his work to help victims of terrorism is an act of resistance against fundamentalism, as we hear from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Five people were killed when Islamic State militants bombed a Kurdish political rally in southeastern Turkey 2.5 years ago. More than 100 were injured, including Lisa Callan, a 29-year-old Kurdish filmmaker. She lost both legs above the knee in the blast. She's able to walk again on robotic prosthetics after a groundbreaking operation in Sydney that inserted metal implants directly into her leg bones. The operation took 7 hours. The surgeons worked for free, and the Kurdish community in Australia raised about $400,000 for other medical and travel expenses. Munjid al-Madiris, an Iraqi-born surgeon, says he used a pioneering technique to help Callan walk again.
What we did for Lisa is implanting integration devices into her skeleton. It is cutting-edge technology that represent an implantable device into the medullary cavity of the femur made of high tensile strength titanium to penetrate the skin through a small opening and is connected to a robotic leg.
Al-Madiris arrived in Australia by boat as a refugee in 1990. He spent 10 months in immigration detention before being granted asylum. He's become one of Australia's most accomplished orthopaedic surgeons and regularly returns to Iraq to operate on victims of terrorism. On a recent visit, he helped to perform surgery on 190 people in 17 days. All the patients had been wounded in militant attacks. Al-Madiris says his work is an act of resistance against fundamentalist ideologies. Callan has returned home to Turkey and is recovering well. A recent video showed her dancing on her new robotic limbs. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The president of the Philippines says he is not interested in extending his six-year term or canceling elections next year. Rodrigo Duterte said in an interview there will be no suspension of elections and there will be no term extension, especially for me. Duterte's term ends in 2022. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, we hear of miracle medical surgeries and technology to help people overcome extreme physical limitations all the time. But a young Afghan woman now living in Florida has not been able to use her hands for most of her life. That hasn't stopped her from leading a successful and productive life. As VOA's Khadija Homa Alkozai reports, sometimes sheer determination can transform a disability into a miraculous journey.
30-year-old Khatira Ibrahimi has not used her hands since she was a young child living in Afghanistan. She suffered from dystonia, a neurological disorder, so she began using her feet instead. By the time she moved to the U.S. with her family, she was already on the road to self-sufficiency.
Every day I try to do something different, so people know me for my accomplishments and not disabilities.
Khatira was homeschooled in Afghanistan, but living in Florida, Khatira found access to better facilities. She improved her skills using her feet to write and to work on her laptop. She graduated from high school and got a technical degree from Florida State College.
Well, for Khatira, we had to move around furniture. So we had 6 desks for her because we found that she would be in 4 classes. We had one desk in the test center and we have another desk that we had in the cafeteria. So when she would eat her lunch or have a snack on campus, she had a place where she could get out of her wheelchair, sit, and use her feet to eat.
Khatira's determination to cope with her physical disability did not go unnoticed.
Well, she never showed that she was unable to perform. She's never shown that side of her. She's always taken on the challenge and was able to complete it.
Khatira loves writing poetry, a way to express her feelings. Her parents are proud of her.
My daughter gives us love. She is our interpreter. We have problems in speaking the English language. Khatira helps us to solve any problem in our document and paperwork.
Khatira believes that determination rather than her physical constraint is what defines her today and helps her set goals for the future. Khadija Homa Alkozai, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia. President Trump is disputing comments about North Korea's leader. In a Twitter comment, Trump said, "The Wall Street Journal stated falsely that I said to them I have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un. Obviously, I don't say that. I didn't say that. I said I have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un. A big difference." All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, doctors say this year's flu season in the United States is moderately severe and could get worse. It's sending scores of patients to the hospital, and a number of people have died from either the flu or its complications. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that what many people think of as a bad cold has turned out to be deadly.
The flu is now widespread across the U.S. Hospitalizations are doubling weekly. Hardest hit is California, where there's so many cases, some hospitals are triaging flu patients in tents or in emergency room hallways.
Most people think of the flu as a cold, and I'm going to get over it. Hopefully people get over it, but not everybody does.
7-year-old Cisco Galvez died from the virus. His mother was devastated.
It happened so fast, in days, you know, in a matter of days, and I never expected it. He was very healthy.
Nationwide, more than 41,000 cases have been reported. In California, close to 30 people have died.
Influenza is here, it's severe, and we need to do whatever we can to prevent and minimize transmission.
The predominant strain is the H3N2 influenza A, which has been associated in the past with a higher risk of hospitalizations and death. Flu vaccines are developed each year using the predominant flu strains that circulated in the Southern Hemisphere's winter months. But some years, the strains used to make the vaccine turn out to be different than the strains that actually make it to the U.S., so the vaccine is not as effective. This year's vaccine is expected to be anywhere from 10 to 30% effective. Still, doctors are advising people to get vaccinated if they haven't done so already.
The flu shot is working. In my opinion, it's working because what we have in the flu shot is actually what the virus that we're seeing circulating is.
Even when the vaccine doesn't match the virus that's circulating, it often prevents the worst complications, pneumonia and death. The CDC and health agencies from 46 other countries published a study in The Lancet with new, higher mortality estimates. They use more recent data and put the expected number of deaths per year between 300,000 and 650,000 worldwide, depending on how severe the flu strain happens to be. The report also says the risk of death is highest in the world's poorest regions, including sub-Saharan Africa. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Over a quarter of the world's land could become significantly drier over the coming decades. That's according to new research from Britain's University of East Anglia and China's Southern University of Science and Technology. Henry Ridgewell tells us the scientists are warning that changes in precipitation and evaporation linked to climate change could increase the likelihood of domino effects like prolonged droughts and forest fires.
Scientists estimate the world has already warmed by around 1 degree Celsius since pre-industrial times. Most of those scientists blame human factors, such as the burning of fossil fuels. Researchers looked at the effect of a 2 degree rise in temperatures on the aridity of different regions, a measure of the dryness of the land surface.
And what we found was that the regions that changed significantly, substantially, compared to the year-to-year variations of the past, were regions such as Southeast China, Central North America, northern parts of South America, Southern Africa, Mediterranean.
The Paris Climate Agreement, signed in 2015, aims to limit global warming to 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels. That's a critical level, says Joshi.
But what we found was that in these six regions that we looked at, you can actually limit the amount of aridification if you stay underneath a 2 degree temperature rise globally.
So what would a significantly drier world look like?
The future average climate will be like the drier years of the present day. It's like encountering a moderate drought that never stops. If you are interested in impacts such as drought, if you're interested in agriculture, even things like heat stress, and knock-on effects of drought, potentially forest fires, for instance, for all these impacts, aridity is really important.
California has just suffered some of the worst forest fires in the state's history. More than 5,500 square kilometers were engulfed by fire in 2017, and almost 50 people killed.
Climate change will make certain things more likely. I mean, forest fires and dry regions may be one of those things. But you can't take a certain impact and just assume this is because of climate change. That's not how climate science works.
The research team warns that agriculture, biodiversity and water quality would all be impacted as vast areas of land become drier. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is found on many different platforms like iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com, where we stream it each and every day. You can also hear us on great radio stations around Asia like DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman in Quezon City, Philippines. Thanks to everyone there who joined us today. And we thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, John Ellison, managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.